You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, last week, the USDA lifted restrictions on some imports of Canadian cattle into the United States. Previously, the U.S. blocked any cows more than 30 months old from entering this country from Canada. Those restrictions were put in place after mad cow disease turned up there in Canada in 2003. According to the USDA, the new rule, which allows the import of cattle up to 8 years old, recognizes Canada's new and improved safeguards against the transmission of BSE, that's a brain-wasting disease transmitted through the meat and meat byproducts of infected cows. But Consumers Union, the folks behind Consumer Reports, Consumers Union is worried that cattle infected with mad cow disease will slip through. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk with a top USDA official about the reasons behind this new import rule and with a scientist from Consumers Union who says the rule could put our food supply at risk. If you'd like to get in on our discussion, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. John Clifford, DVM, is the Chief Veterinary Officer for the Animal Plant Health Inspection Services of the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington. He joins us by phone from his office there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Clifford.
Thanks, Ira. Glad to be with you.
Thank you. Michael Hansen is a senior scientist at Consumers Union. That's the publisher of Consumer Reports in Yonkers, New York, and he joins us today. Welcome to the program, Dr. Hansen.
Thank you. Glad to be with you, Ira.
Dr. Clifford, let me ask you first. As I said in the introduction, the new rule on the import of beef from Canada went into effect just days ago. In effect, this rule relaxed restrictions on the import of Canadian cattle. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That rule would allow animals born after what we determined to be an effective feed ban date of March 1999 to come into the U.S. for purposes of feeding, for slaughter, and for breeding.
And why the rule change?
Well, the reason for the rule change is we use the best science known internationally with regards to this. We know that BSE is an issue that needs to be addressed based on the best science. We certainly have concerns for consumers as well as for animal health, but we also know how to deal with this disease internationally. And this is a disease on the decline, and you do that through ruminant-to-ruminant feed bans for protection of livestock, and you also do it through the specified risk materials removed at slaughter to protect human health.
Mm-hmm. But did Canada not have several cases of BSE in the last several years?
Yes, they have had several cases of BSE, and some of those animals actually were born after a date what we determined to be an effective feed ban date. And we took all of that into account into an extensive risk analysis. That analysis was peer-reviewed by people outside of government and was found to be very sound in the analysis itself, and it shows the risk would be extremely low of establishing BSE in the U.S. livestock population.
And do you have a number for that risk?
Well, when I say low, I mean very, very low. So it's extremely
low. One
in
what?
A number.
One
in what? Basically, what we look at is in that risk assessment, we took the worst-case scenario, and in that assessment would indicate at most over a 20-year period of potentially bringing in up to 19 animals from Canada that could be have the possibility of exposure to BSE. Now, with in addition to that, though, with the interlocking safeguards that we have in the U.S. as well as in Canada, the actual likelihood of having a case show up in the U.S. from a Canadian animal would be less than one.
One in what?
One in period.
One in all the cattle that ever comes in. That's pretty low.
Yes, sir.
Michael Hansen, you don't agree with that, do you?
No. I would just point out that we had problems with the risk assessment that was done. And I would just point out that since the effective date, which is March 1st, 1999, 5 out of 10 of Canada's BSE cases have been born. So to say that the feed rules are effective, they don't seem to be very effective if half of the BSE cases in Canada were born after the feed ban was declared effective. I would also point out out that, again, using some of the best science, the Center for Disease Control has pointed out that the prevalence of BSE using official statistics is 30 times higher in Canada than the U.S. So allowing animals from north of the border to come in is problematic. And even though they say they'll only be up to 8 years, there's a problem of how you identify the age. In Canada, you have to have a paper documentation, and then the inspectors will look at the teeth to verify that age. What they're going to do with the cows they allow in is they'll just allow an age to be determined by a piece of paper. No one will be required to look at the teeth to verify that age. And, of course, the older animals aren't worth much because no one wants to buy them because of increased risk for BSE. So if you can just have a slip of paper and say they're a younger age, they could potentially slip in. In Canada, that wouldn't happen because the inspectors look at the teeth to make sure to verify the age. That will not be allowed. That's not going to happen in animals coming in from Canada. So they could be even older animals. And again, with this higher risk of BSE up there, we're increasing the risk down here as well.
John Clifford, what's wrong with Michael Hansen's analysis?
Well, there's several things. It is, and we certainly appreciate, you know, the concern out there. But at the same time, though, the problem with the analysis is we have done a good estimate of prevalence in Canada. The prevalence level, which is the same, we use the same techniques that we use to establish prevalence in the U.S. through our enhanced surveillance program, is about 6.8 cases per 10 million adult cows. The findings of 5 cases after effective feed ban date does not indicate that the feed ban itself is not effective. You're not going to have 100% compliance with any program. However, we're looking for a high degree of compliance where you've got 90% plus of compliance level, and Canada has that type system.
Mm-hmm. Michael Hansen, why wouldn't a diseased cow or any cattle be picked up by the U.S. system?
Well, because if they come in and they're not exhibiting symptoms, one, you wouldn't pick them up. And even if they might be exhibiting symptoms, they might not be caught. It should be pointed out in Europe, where the problem is much more severe, even though they pull suspected animals out of the food chain, they still have found hundreds of animals that just were going to slaughter. And because they were required to be tested, they turned up positive. So there can be animals that have the disease that are incubating it and then can potentially transmit it that aren't expressing symptoms and so would be hard to be caught unless they're tested. And we test a very small fraction. Right now we're testing about 0.1% of the cows that go to slaughter.
John Clifford, is that right?
What we do is we test about 40,000 animals, but we test the animals with the greatest likelihood of having disease versus all animals. The test that we use is not a food safety test. In fact, there's no food safety test available for BSE. If you use that test will not show positive until the animal is within a few months of exhibiting clinical evidence and signs of the disease. And therefore, it will not detect every animal at slaughter. And if, in effect, too, the prevalence is so low, then in effect, you're testing a lot of animals out there that are going to be normally negative. So we test the animals that are most critically important, those that are exhibiting signs of clinical evidence of the disease. The FSIS, the Food Safety Inspection Service, has inspectors there at the plants looking for those clinical signs, and we do not allow downers into the food supply in the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm. Michael Hansen, what's wrong with the way they look at the cows coming in?
Well, again, they're looking at a very small number. To say that those are the highest of the high risk, I would disagree with that. Even when they did their expanded surveillance program, where they looked at about 10 times the rate that they're looking now, 85% of all the animals they looked at were dead on the farm, no other information. So those aren't necessarily high-risk animals. The high-risk animals are the ones, for example, that you suspect of having rabies but turn out to be negative or that are exhibiting symptoms. populations, and both of those populations were actually undersampled compared to what their predicted levels was. The vast majority of cows, at least they were sampled in the expanded program, were simply animals that were dead, and we didn't know anything more about them. And those aren't necessarily high-risk animals. If there's a drought, for example, and a bunch of animals die because of that, they're not at increased risk for BSE, but their carcasses could have been shipped off or their brains could have been shipped off for testing. So there's a debate about how effective that surveillance program was. And I should also point out that many scientists that are prion scientists do not agree with the USDA and think that the number of animals that are tested, that the surveillance should be greater than it is now.
Why don't we test more, John?
We sample our surveillance, and the surveillance is to estimate prevalence and to make sure that the other safeguards that we have are effective. We sample at 10 times the level that is needed for the international community, which is the World Organization for Animal Health, which has set standards for safe trade in animal and animal products, which the U.S. is a member of. In addition, Dr. Hansen mentioned the issue of dentition in cattle coming from Canada. Every animal coming into the U.S. from Canada for breeding or for feeding is required to have an identification ear tag. In addition, they'll either be branded or have a tattoo identifying them to Canada. The statement about dentition: animals cannot be identified by age once they get past about 4 to 5 years of age. So all of those animals that come in are required to be certified by the government of Canada based upon their age, and that would be based upon those animals having a record of their birth.
Mm-hmm. Michael, any response?
Again, it's my understanding that in Canada, the animals are, the inspectors there also look at the dentition to verify age. This is the first I've heard that all the animals' date of birth will actually have to be verified before coming in. If proof of that is done, that would allay the concerns. But I was just relaying concerns that I had heard from representatives from the inspectors themselves.
And our one other point I would like to make is relative to this disease worldwide, BSE is on a decline worldwide, not on an increase. And in the main country of the United Kingdom, where you saw hundreds of thousands of cases, in 2007 they've had a total of 37 cases. That is down from a high in 1992 of 36,682 cases. And the reason it's on a decline worldwide is we know how to address this disease, as I indicated earlier. And that's through having effective feed bans and through the SRM removal at slaughter to protect human health.
All right, let me remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Michael Hansen, any?
Yeah, I would like to respond to that. He is correct when he says that it is declining in the UK and internationally. That's because they've taken strong action. The ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban we have here with a whole bunch of loopholes, when the UK did something similar, they had 40,000 animals born after that date that developed BSE. They didn't start completely controlling this until in 1996 they stopped feeding of all mammalian protein to all food animals. That's the strong measure that needs to happen. We have a feed ban here that is weaker than even the SRM ban that was in the UK that decreased the incidence but didn't get rid of it because of these continual other ways that the infected material can get in. If you want to control it by a feed ban, you have to take strong action. That's what's been done in Europe and Japan, which has had a problem. They stopped feeding of all mammalian protein to food animals. We are allowing lots of material. There is blood actually from cows can be fed back to cattle. We know the infectious agent can be transmitted by blood with transfusions in animals and in humans. So allowing cattle blood products to be fed back to cattle is not a good idea. Mm-hmm. There's also chicken litter that is allowed to be fed. There's about 1 million tons or 2 billion pounds of chicken litter, and that's primarily chicken feces and spilled feed. I would point out that in August of 2003, Lester Crawford, who was then head of the Food and Drug Administration, said that chickens waste so much of their spill, so much of their feed, that chicken litter can be up to 30% meat and bone meal by weight. And material from cows can go into chicken feed, and if you just do the math, if there's 2 billion pounds of that chicken litter being fed back to cows, and if up to 30% of it might be spilled feed, which could contain materials from cows, and given that the infectious dose is less than, could be as low as 1 milligram, that's a real concern. And so this feed ban that we have is very, very weak, is nowhere near as strong as it needs to be, and is nowhere near as strong as it was in Europe and Japan.
Let me give John I got a minute to respond. John, you want to respond to that or move on?
Yes, please. All right.
Go ahead.
Actually, you know, there's a big difference between the U.S. prevalence and the U.K. prevalence of 180,000 cases versus 2 cases in the U.S., 3 if you count the one that we found in the from Canada. Our prevalence is extremely low. We have an effective feed ban. That feed ban is monitored and put in place by the Food and Drug Administration. FDA will tell you that they have a high degree of compliance with that feed ban. And while any more stringent effects will lessen the risk lower, it will not make that much difference overall because the risk is already so extremely low. So, you know, you can do those extra things and you'll lessen the risk a small amount, but overall it won't be that much.
All right, we're gonna have to leave it there because we've run out of time. We'll come back to this issue because we never got to the issue about food labeling, how to know if your food is coming from Canada or not. That's another issue. We'll get back to both of you. I want to thank both of you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, sir.
Michael
thank
Hansen, you. Senior Scientist at Consumers Union, and John Clifford, Chief Veterinary Officer for the Animal Plant and Health Inspection Services at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We had help today from engineers Mary Gaffney in Chicago, Michael Cullen in Washington. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Maleski. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We've got new videos up there and videos from past programs that you're there to enjoy. Also, you can download them now on iTunes. Our videos are going up on iTunes, and so are our podcasts, which are already there. Have a great shopping spree this weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.